Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl, and I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together, this is...
Me! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Well, hello, Dad. How you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. Taylor, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I'm a little sleepy. A little sleepy today, but otherwise I'm fine.
I am too. I'm a little tired today. It's a rainy day, though, so rainy days do that to you.
I feel like this part of the year, especially when you're just, like, winter is over. It's spring, officially, but, like, the cold weather has just been around for so many months now, and it's so close to being done. Every day you wake up and it's cold, it's just exhausting.
It just won't let go. I mean, it gets warm during the day, but in the morning and at night, it's pretty chilly.
At least you get some warm hours on those days. Today I woke up and it was just like pouring the rain out and cold all day. And of course it's the day that I have to run around and do a million things. So I don't love that. I want to go back to bed, but, we'll get there. Have you had anything good to drink this week?
Well, I took our own advice and I concocted me a proper daiquiri.
Oh, nice. What'd you think?
Well, the first one I made, I kind of followed the standard ingredients there of, what is it? Three quarter.
Yep. Or 2-1-1, either way.
Yeah. Well, that's what I tried. There was 2 3/4, 3/4. And for my taste, which was unusual, it was a little too sweet. Mm. Cause I don't, you know, normally I don't mind them being a little bit sweet. It was a little too sweet. So I adjusted it to 2 1-ounce of lime juice and 1/2 ounce of simple.
Oh yeah.
And mix that up. And it was much better. I really enjoyed it a lot better. Not being so sweet. Yeah.
Nice.
So it had the same amount, but different proportions.
Yeah, that works. Yeah. A lot of people, an ounce of lime juice with either 3/4 ounce or a full ounce of simple. A lot of people, I feel like, do that with their daiquiris. It's just because rum is sweet. You know, rum brings a certain amount of sweetness to the drink.
Yeah.
For the most part.
That's why I went with just 1/2 ounce of simple in there and did it. And it was really good. I mean, it was, and what I really liked about it too, is like I say, the only thing I'd had before was a frozen daiquiri. And you shake this real good and pour it in the glass and it's nice and frosty and it doesn't need any ice floating in there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good, they go down easy though. They go down quick.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they do. They do. It's easy to drink rum fast.
Oh yeah. And that's it's easy to modify. I just had one on the menu that I just launched. We've got a drink. I'm calling it the Monkey Paw. Mm-hmm. It's two rums. I've got an aged rum and a white rum, some basil infused simple syrup, some lime juice, a little bit of Banana Brazil, which is a banana liqueur, and a little bit of Benedictine, just a bar spoon of Benedictine. So it's a nice kind of earthy, herbal banana daiquiri, but people have been liking it so far. Rum is a hard sell unless you work at a tiki bar. So if I can put a rum drink on the menu that sells decently, I always feel like I've accomplished something.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. You talk about Benedictine. We still had the bottle from when I got it from back when we had discussed it before. And Mom found this drink, the Brotherhood, and has been liking those in preference over the paper plane. It's a paper plane sort of drink.
Did she find that one or did she make it? I thought she said she made it.
Now I don't know whether she forgot what she had made before or what, but she looked something up and found a drink called the Brotherhood and it had those ingredients in it.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. I love Benedictine.
Yeah. We've been putting it to good use.
Yeah. It goes down easy, but, I was hoping we had like 2 days of good weather last week. And that's what inspired the topic for this episode, because I had some customers ordering micheladas from me. And it was a good day for a michelada because it was nice out. It is no longer michelada weather, but I thought nonetheless, we could talk about the michelada to get you all ready for when michelada weather finally arrives.
That's right. And since we're oftentimes late for Cinco de Mayo in our recordings, this is getting you out ahead of the game. This is something you can think about to have on Cinco de Mayo that's not that far off.
Absolutely. And as we will cover, there are many ways to make the drink. We're going to talk about it today. So, you know, hopefully by then you figured out your personal favorite michelada.
Yeah, you have time to tinker with it.
You got about a month to figure it out. So the michelada, it's not really a specific recipe as much as it's sort of a concept for preparing a beer. And that's, if it's into sort of a larger category of Mexican and South Central American beer cocktails that in origin were known sort of collectively as cerveza preparada, or just basically prepared beer. Cerveza preparada in term dates back to at least the 1940s, but people were probably putting stuff in their beer long before that. And by stuff, I mean, you know, it could be citrus juice, hot sauce, clam juice, salts, peppers, fruit purees, you name it. Just sort of a way of altering your beer. And we really see it come to the rise of, especially when, as we get into the era of like commercial bottled and canned beers. And some of this became popular just for practical reasons. You know, early canned beers tasted sort of tinny, so adding a little acid or adding a little salt, adding some hot sauce would kind of cover up that flavor. Same with like bottles, your caps could rust. And so, you know, you'd wipe off the little rim of your beer with a lime or something to get that rust away, to get that flavor off. So part of it just became a sort of a side process of having mass-produced canned and bottled beers.
And then other ones were thinking of ways to maybe make it so that their beers weren't so intoxicating.
Yeah. Well, this, you know, like a lot of drinks we talk about, the michelada does not have one firm origin story. It has, what, anywhere from two to five, several?
Yeah, just depending on what article you Google.
It's true. There are a lot. I guess the earliest one is probably dating back to the 1910s. Mm-hmm. And that is contributed to General Don Augusto Michel, who liked his beer with lime and hot sauce to sort of help limit the amount of booze he and his soldiers imbibed.
Yeah, because you're not adding more booze to it like you do in a lot of cocktails. You're just adding other booze. In this, you're cutting it with the lime juice and possibly other things. I mean, people adding in hot sauce, chili peppers, you know, different type things. And that's what you say. There's not one recipe for it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of one of those things where here's a general guideline of what you're trying to do. Now have at it and see how you like it to have it done.
Yeah. And I like the idea of this guy finding a clever way of like, oh, this is the way this beer is good, but it's also tricking his soldiers into watering down their beers a little bit. You know, a lot of times they're served over ice micheladas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe you got a little extra dilution going on in there.
Yeah.
But in that story, his preference caught the ear of a bartender in San Luis Potosi who started serving this drink in honor of the general. And, he called it, you know, Michel's chelada. So chelada is a word that's just sort of slang for a cold beer. Like chela is a sort of a slang term for beer, and helado means cold. So people would say, you know, chelada is just a cold beer. Just give me a chelada, a cold beer. So Michel's chelada just got shortened to michelada.
Michelada.
Yeah. That story, the sort of etymology of that story is interesting because it is repeated again in a more recent story and one that actually does have sort of newspaper articles giving it some authenticity, which is funny because it's the same. It's another guy named Michel, but this is in the 1960s. And this involves a civil engineer, Michel Esper Jorge, who was supposedly named the drink after he showed up hungover for a tennis match at Club Deportivo Potosino in San Luis Potosi, Mexico. And, you know, he was trying to get his head ready for the game. So he stopped by the bar and he ordered a beer with some salt and lime juice. And he started adding some of the bar top condiments to his drink. And the bartender asked, what are you making? What are you doing? And he responded, Michelada, which is, well, his name was Michel. So he could be saying, you know, it's Michel's Michelada, my beer. But also because me would imply like mine, he could have been saying my beer. It works either way.
Yeah.
Was he saying my cold beer? Was he saying Michel's cold beer? In either case, same idea. The name caught on. His friends started ordering the drink in his style, like, oh, give me Michel's chelada. And it got shortened to, oh, give me a Michelada. So hard to say.
Yep. And the probably one of the only things that they have in common is, of course, there's ones that aren't, but all of them were some sort of Mexican lager that they were using in there as the beer.
Yes. Yeah. That is definitely the thing that I think arguably is the important, the one rule you can't break about a Michelada, because Mexican beer is, I mean, Mexican lager is the classic style of it, is a very specific style. It's not malty, it's not hoppy, it is just clean, cold, crisp beer.
I always detect a little bit of spiciness from it. I don't know what kind of spice, but it always seems like it does, unless I'm just imagining it. But like, I'm thinking of like Dos Equis or Tecate or something like that, that those always had just a little hint of it.
Well, a lot of those, and I don't know if it's not like across the board thing, but a lot of Mexican lagers actually have, they have flaked maize in them, which is basically just corn that's had all its germ and protein and oil rolled out of it. And it does add this very dry, bright flavor to it that kind of reminds me of the same spiciness that when we talk about like rye whiskey.
Right.
When we say it's spicy, we don't mean it's hot, but it's spicy. It's this like vegetal, like, I don't know, this very dry spice.
It's some kind of tang. I don't know how to describe it. Some kind of tang that you get when you swallow it or something, you know?
Yeah, I feel like that Mexican lagers have that same kind of that rye spice, which I think is often attributed to that flaked maize. It's that really bright vegetal, you know, it's not hampered down by any maltiness, any sweetness, any richness. It's just super bright. And I do think that style of beer is the perfect stage for a Michelada, because you want something super cold and you don't want to have like, you know, hops and sweetness competing with everything else. Then it just becomes too much with everything you're already adding into it.
Yeah. And this is a drink to sip and relax on a hot day, or when you've come in from working, you know, outside or something like that, that this is what this is supposed to be for.
And some you know, depending on, I've worked at a lot of bars that have served micheladas, a version of a michelada, and you know, they can differ in how in line with the sort of original concept that like it's an altered beer, but it's a beer before it's a cocktail. Some get a little far away from that. You know, sometimes you hear it described as like a beer Bloody Mary, and that's a little too you could put a little bit of a Bloody Mary mix in your in your michelada, I guess, but then it kind of becomes something else.
Yeah, I've seen some of them that said they put Clamato in there.
Yeah. Clamato is a more recent popular thing. Like recent is in like the, you know, the 80s and 90s, but while again, there was no like set original recipe, it was thought that early form of it probably had as like the hot sauce, something called a petrolio sauce, which is sort of like a combo of Worcestershire, Tabasco or some sort of hot sauce, and Maggi sauce, which is just like a super rich, like MSG heavy soy sauce. And so a lot of bartenders, if they're trying to make the like OG Michelada, will make that. They'll make that that petrolio sauce with just lime and salt to their beer.
That sounds good. I've seen black pepper added in there sometimes.
Oh yeah.
Add to that, seems like a good offset taste. Seems like something that would be, you know, really make it pop or something.
Yeah.
Well, kind of like salt in your chocolate milk, you know?
Well, and you know, all like the popularity really came into the scene, I guess, kind of alongside the craft beer and then the cocktail movement. I mean, which is funny because this is, it doesn't involve craft beer, and I guess it's sort of a beer cocktail, but it's not, it's less cocktail than just, you know, altered beer. But in the 90s, really starting in Texas, you see this explosion of micheladas on bar menus all throughout the U.S. Before then, it was more of a south of the border thing.
Haven't seen it anywhere, though. I've never seen a michelada in a bar, you know, as far as offered as something in a recipe. Now, I have seen some of the, like, the Budweiser versions, maybe, or Miller, one or the other, that had, like, the Bud Light Lime or something like that. Of course, they don't call themselves a michelada. I guess there's some that call them a michelada-style beer or chelada-style beer.
Yeah, the sort of canned explosion happened a little bit later. Like, it caught on in the cocktail scene, in the bar scene. I think every bar I've worked at for the last like 15 years has had some sort of michelada style cocktail on the menu. But the first one to put something in a can was the Bud Light Lime, which was a chelada style beer. And I was taught that michelada implied tomato juice or clamato or something, and chelada just meant lime and salt. That's more of a modern interpretation of terminology. Again, just, you know, these were anamorphous terms back in the origin. Michelada, chelada, you could have tomato, you didn't have to have tomato. You could have clamato, you didn't have to have clamato. You could just have, you know, lime juice and salt.
Clamato.
Yeah, it was whatever you wanted. It was just a term. But they've, in more recent years, they've kind of gotten solidified into this idea that if you're saying michelada, it probably has some sort of tomato based or hot sauce, something in it. And if you're saying just chelada, chelada just means this lime and salt. That's the more like American marketing term or explanation of it. But Bud Light Lime was the first one to do that. And then not long after that, the first like tomato involved michelada in a can, Tecate put up, and that was in 2010, I believe. And that was followed quickly by sort of a windfall of products over the next decade. You have, you know, Corona, Modelo, Dos Equis. You've got just like every major brand of beer gets into the canned, but a Budweiser, Sol, like they all get into the canned micheladas. There's, you know, canned micheladas with tamarind and with mango and, you know, with chamoy. With Clamato, Budweiser has a Bud Clamato somewhere out there. I don't know if it's still in the market, but it was for a while, and it was weird.
Yeah. I don't want ones with tomato juice or Clamato juice. Are there clams involved in Clamato juice?
What do you think, Dad?
I think it's like there's clams and tomato in there. And
there it is. Yeah,
it's Clamato.
It's all in the name. That's absolutely accurate.
Well, I don't want that.
That is, well,
I don't want clams and tomato. I don't like either one of those.
I wouldn't mess with that now, because, you know, I've recently discovered I have some sort of fish allergy. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've been a vegan too long. I don't know what's going on with my immune system, but I accidentally.
Well, that happened to Mom. Mom got deathly ill eating oysters one night.
No, I accidentally had a bite of scallop while I was tasting a dish at work and almost died. So I don't know. I'm weary of anything that would come from anything in the sea.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm doing them injustice to say I don't think I'd want to buy them pre-made in a can. I would rather get the beer and add my own lime juice or salt or pepper or hot sauce or whatever, and come up with a recipe that I liked, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I remember trying some of those when they first hit the market. And I liked them when they're if they're thin. The thing is for me, it's like, I don't mind a little bit. Like when we would make them at my old restaurant, we would use our Bloody Mary mix, but we did have a nice, like spicy Bloody Mary mix. And we would only use like 2 ounces in the bottom of a pint glass of Bloody Mary mix, you know, and some lime juice, and then top it up with beer. So it wasn't a lot of. It's not like a Bloody Mary mix where you're drinking, you know, 6 ounces of Bloody Mary mix to 2 ounces of spirit.
2 ounces of vodka or whatever. Yeah,
you want it to still kind of have the body of a beer. You just want some of the flavor in there. But some of the ones in the cans can be a little on the side of thick versus thin. So I am definitely more a fan of making them a la minute. I mean, when at one of the bars I worked at, we had a Michelada on the menu that was literally just, you'd open a can of Tecate, you'd dash in some Cholula, sprinkle in some salt, and that was it. And lime juice, a little dash of lime juice, of course.
Yeah, but I could see like putting the extra ingredients in the bottom of the glass, then pouring the beer in on top of it to kind of like get it mixing, you know, to pour it in there and let it mix like that, as opposed, because you don't want to shake your beer. You don't want to stir it.
You don't want to shake it.
So just the pouring process would be the mixing of it.
I will say, and I think it's the salt. I'm not a chemist, so I think it's the salt, though, that causes it. When you add it, like the ones that we would do where we would just pop open the can of beer and add everything to the can, you aren't dumping anything out, so you're just adding just a little bit on top.
Right.
If you put the salt in first, the beer just exploded. I guess that's just some sort of chemical reaction. If you put your salt right in your beer, it just fizzes all over the place.
Huh. Well, the acid in the lime, if you put in lime, probably counteracts a lot of that fizziness, huh?
Yeah. So, like, you wanted to add the salt always went on last, and I would always try to put it sort of on the top of the beer can, not in the hole. So it's there, but it's not gonna get all over the bar top.
Well, that's another reason why I'd want to put it in a glass. I like the idea of the salted rim as opposed to just putting salt down in the beer.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you're going to do salt, that's fine. But tajin is also popular in micheladas, and also it's definitely an upgrade. Tajin, of course, being it's a powder of like salt, but also like chili flakes, dehydrated chili flakes and lime. So you kind of get heat, you get lime, everything all in one.
I do like good old, you know, margarita salt, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can make, we make a tajin salt at work. So we get more like extra, like nice crunchy salt flakes and then tajin spice.
Yeah.
Micheladas, they caught on in the bar in the 90s and the 2000s. They exploded into the can marketplace in the 2010s and 2020s. By 2020, there was $500 million sales chunk in the marketplace, specifically around just canned micheladas. It was one of the quickest exploding categories during that time period, second only to seltzer, which I knew the seltzer thing was happening. I didn't really see the explosion of canned chelada style beers, but it's been a huge, huge market growth in that category.
Well, I can't believe that I haven't seen them when they've exploded like that. I mean, they've got to have them in some of the joints that we have around here. You know, they got to have those in there. Now, like I say, I've seen Bud Light Lime, if that counts in that category. And it seems like that Miller had a version of it too, but I don't know for sure. But I might have to keep my eye out better.
It might depend on your demographic because, a lot of a large part of that buyer marketplace, which makes sense, is Mexican Americans. You know, that's the way that they drink their beers. These are beers, you know, sort of based around a lot of flavors that are associated with you know, Mexican cuisine and drinks. So I feel like I see a lot of them, but you know, I live in a Mexican neighborhood. There's a lot around me.
I'm gonna pick up some Mexican lager and make my own, I think, next weekend.
What's your go-to? Do you have a go-to Mexican lager? You like Tecate, don't you?
I like Tecate, and I like Dos Equis too.
Yeah, Dos Equis is good.
So one of them. And then there's also another one, starts with an M, I think.
Modelo.
Yeah, Modelo, yeah. I get all of those from time to time.
Well,
not so much lately because I don't drink beer as much lately because I'm mostly doing mixed drinks now. Well, you changed me off of beer totally. And
I mean, to be honest, I used to be into beer. I used to be into beer. I drink cider. I drink wine. Now, I'm either drinking cocktails or if I don't want a cocktail and I just want to like have something, it's weather dependent. If it's a hot, hot day and like I just want something crisp, I want a Mexican style lager, either that or a High Life. I don't know why. Miller High Life or Modelo or Tecate. Just ice cold. That is my favorite.
Sounds like your Uncle Michael. He sent me a picture. He texted me a picture the other night. He was at some bar and he said, "I'm going old style tonight." And he showed me, he held up a can of Miller High Life that he was drinking. I'm going old style.
I don't know what it is about High Life that I love so much. It's just a nothing beer. It's like, it's refreshing. It's not going to get me drunk. Like, I can have, you know, two or three Miller High Lifes and I will feel nothing. It's like a 4% alcohol beer. It's not heavy. It's not sweet. It's just there and gone. It's champagne and beers, baby.
That was my go-to beer as a kid. That was my favorite. Yeah.
I don't think you're supposed to have a go-to beer as a kid, Dad.
Well, I was 16. Is that still a kid?
All right.
But the Miller High Life, that was what I drank. I would buy Miller. I didn't like Budweiser or any of the other. I liked Miller. And then when they came out with Miller Genuine Draft, oh, I thought that was the bomb, man.
See, I think that's it. If I want something that tastes like something, I want a cocktail. And if I want something that tastes like nothing, I want a High Life.
Yeah.
Those are my two moods. But you know, there's if you are a fan, if you try out the Michelada and you discover you're a fan, there are a lot of modern ways to celebrate it. There are actually, I thought there was just one, but I was looking around. There are several Michelada festivals that take place around the world and definitely around the country. There's like two that I found in Texas. There's one in Chicago that's real big. And at these festivals, you know, you have people show up and make their particular version of a Michelada. So you've got Michelada throwdowns happening, you know, special regional Micheladas on display.
Well, we have about two or three beer festivals each year and two or three wine festivals each year. And in addition to hot dog and chili and taco festivals, maybe I can get them to get going with a Michelada festival. That'd be pretty good. I think it'd go over all right.
Yeah. Get one of the beer festivals to have a Michelada contest. People get into that, you know?
Yeah.
Cause that's the thing. I feel like sometimes, you know, people think like, oh, like, like West Virginia, it's, you know, Appalachia. Like, we don't associate like that with like spice, but people forget that there's like the Southern to like the Appalachians. Like, there's a lot of people that like hot sauce in that area.
Yeah.
It's a lot of, know their way around a bottle of spice.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think that would go over well.
Yeah, that sounds like it'd be good. Make sure you have it in the summer.
Yeah.
So that's when you need to be drinking those, in the heat of the day.
Well, and, you know, if you did want to have a specific Michelada festival and pick a day for it, the best day is probably July 12th because that's National Michelada Day.
Oh, well, okay.
So
I hope that falls on a Saturday. That's probably the best day to do it.
Yeah, it'd be weird if it was like a Tuesday and you're just, you know, pounding beer and hot sauce.
The hell with work tomorrow.
I mean, that's fine for my line of work, but you know, some of you have to have standards. It's on a Friday. Right. Oh, that's fine. You get off work, you go have some drinks, have some micheladas. But yeah, it is to me, I mean, and I think it really, like, what I've observed is it is such a seller on a brunch menu. I know, you know, I'm not as hungover these days as I used to be in my youth. I don't often have the issue where if I'm hungover, I'm not going out to drink the next day, you know?
Yeah.
The past, it was a young person problem where it's like, oh man, I'm hungover, but I'm supposed to meet people for brunch today. Like, that's not a thing I do anymore.
I have to go drink my way through it.
Yeah. I try to avoid those situations now, but I did find that, you know, I like the idea of a savory brunch cocktail, but a Bloody Mary always just feels like I like the first few sips of it, and then I'm just like, I don't want to drink this glass of gazpacho.
No, but you're right. I can see that as being a good thing for a brunch.
Oh, yeah.
Good cocktail for a brunch.
Just a little bit. And that's, we do it at our current place. We'll just use a little, again, like, I've got a nice, like, clean, spicy, like, not too weird Bloody Mary mix as our house mix. And we'll just do a little bit of that. And a good amount of lime juice, and a nice sprinkle of salt, and if you're real special, a little half ounce of mezcal in there. Top it off with a cold, crisp lager. It's good.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I'll have to work on that next weekend.
There you go. So start working now on your summertime michelada recipe, and hopefully by the time the warm weather finally comes our way, you'll be good to go.
Have it down, Pat.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. It's a new drink for the repertoire, Dad.
The michelada. Next Long time may it live.
I know, Brian. Next time I make it home, you guys are just going to have a whole functional speakeasy in your house.
I know.
It's great.
We already, people come in now and they're looking at our bar going, wow, what all do you have here? Well, some of the stuff you get to digging around, you might find something we didn't even know was there.
That's true. I've done that before at your house.
Yeah. That Benedictine, I thought that was long gone. And Mom got in there digging around a couple of weekends ago and said, oh, we got Benedictine. What can that go in? And that's when she found the Brotherhood.
Well, I'll have to send you my daiquiri recipe. You can use it for that too.
All right. I didn't know that Benedictine went in a daiquiri.
Well, it doesn't go in a classic daiquiri. It goes in my special daiquiri.
Oh, okay. I get a Taylor special daiquiri. Yeah.
You should also look up a Vucre. We talked about it before, but you need that for a Vucre. I think you'd like a Vucre.
I do remember that word.
Yeah. We talked about it, I think, forever ago. That was one of our first episodes together, but now you can make one.
All right.
All right. Well,
our one.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. I got to learn about the cocktail from south of the border that I didn't know about.
I had to
have you spell it for me because I thought you said Mucinex at first, and I thought that can't be a drink.
Yeah. You know, there is a lot of medicine that starts off in the alcohol world. I don't think Mucinex is one of them. Yeah, it's what Malort eventually became, right? Cleans your sinuses.
Malort.
Yes. So that's a little bit closer. Those little balls, those little gross snot balls in the Mucinex commercials could also very easily be made out of Malort.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it.
Same vibes. all right. Well, thank you all for listening to us. Thank you for supporting us if you are on our Patreon. If you want to have any questions, comments, episode suggestions, you can email us at meettheboozecast@gmail.com. And if you want to discuss this week's episode or anything else, you can do that
at Meet the Boozecast group page on Facebook.
We'll do that. Well, I have been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
About being too old to go in and drink away your hangover. Man, I'm so old. When I was a kid, the Dead Sea was just sick.
Okay. Is that a Rodney Dangerfield joke, Dad? Where'd you get that?
George Burns.
Okay. All right.
Do you even know who he is?
Ish.